This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 436 for Tuesday, March 15th, 2016. My name's Martin Spriggs, and I'm joined, as usual, by Sally Draper. Morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. It literally is morning. Are you a morning person?
Some days. I probably don't get near enough sleep, so it's probably hard to tell which kind of person I am. Some mornings are better than others, but I normally stay up as long as it takes, so I don't have a regular schedule. How about you?
I think I'm normally a pretty good morning person, and the reason I ask is because we are doing something a little bit different today. We are actually recording the show at 8 a.m., and in 8-plus years of podcasting, I don't think we've recorded the show at 8 a.m. very often.
Usually we're late or early afternoon. Lately it's early afternoon, but normally late afternoon. But we'll see how it goes. So that will be the true test, right?
That's right. Maybe our listeners or viewers can weigh in on whether we're morning people or not.
Yep. So what are we going to talk about on this fine morning?
Well, exciting for us that we are circling back to talk about our book project. Those that have followed Wells Tech for a while know that it's our tradition to discuss a book each season of the podcast, so kind of fall through spring, following the school year calendar or whatever. And each month we do a new chapter of a particular book that we're discussing. It's always been a fun thing for me to explore some different topics and things and kind of look at the effects of technology on our ministry through the eyes of an author and the things they share in their book. And this season is no different. We're doing a chapter a month of a book. It does have a little different flavor, though, because we actually decided to write the book ourselves. We're writing a book on project management specifically for Christian organizations, churches, schools, and other organizations that are faith-based. And been a fun journey for us, challenging at times, and certainly we've learned a lot along the way as we explored project management. This month in particular, we're focusing on communication.
Yeah, and I don't think we could have written this book without having kind of the episodes that we have behind us and some of the contributions that have been made by show listeners. I think our horizons have been broadened. We have a better feel or flavor for what issues are in front of congregations, in front of schools, in front of other organizations as they're trying to wrestle with projects. And that's kind of made up each and every chapter. And we've kind of given this a theme, which is, I think, very appropriate, with all your heart, because it really is a passion. It has to be something that you throw yourself into, especially in these situations where you're dealing with limited resources. Very often you're dealing with a whole set of volunteers. It's really a labor of love, and God is putting something on your heart to go and do. And we've used throughout most of every chapter the example of Nehemiah. The book of Nehemiah is pretty inspirational when it comes to leadership and project management. It turns out that Nehemiah had a pretty big project on his hands, rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem, and he had a lot of challenges and obstacles, very similar in some respects to the things that we will face as we're trying to get the Lord's work done. But as we saw in Nehemiah, we see in our own lives, the Lord is behind it. He will bless it. And one of those things that he really needs to bless in our projects is communications. So important for project management. Sally, you and I work on a lot of different projects, and I think that is probably the most important thing that we'll look back on every project and say, well, it went well because we communicated well, both with each other or with other project team members, but also the organization at large, and especially those sponsors of the project, those users of the project.
Absolutely, Martin. And, you know, we're pretty far into our book, and we've actually talked about communication along the way, especially that internal team communication that is so important to successful project efforts and things. This chapter's communication is a little bit broader than that. So we're not really talking about publicity and getting the word out to the world about what you're doing, but more internal communication with your congregation or school or organization, so that it's not just your project team who's toiling away in a walled off place doing this thing, whatever it is, but it's got the whole organization behind it. That's actually something Nehemiah didn't necessarily have behind him. Right. He didn't have a church backing him up. But we do, and we want to make sure that we keep people engaged and assisting us along the way in many different ways, right, as we work through our project.
Yeah, one of the real neat things about being in the situations that we're in, working for a faith-based organization, and I'm sure you've seen this with your work at the Treasure House, for instance, or, you know, as a pastor works in a congregation or a principal works in a school, is you have an organization that has commissioned you to do work. They have these projects, they've approved these projects, for instance, they want you or are encouraging you to run a VBS, you know, they're behind your building project, whatever it is. So the organization as a whole has said, we're going to do this, but now your little project team has to get it done. But don't underestimate the value of bringing or engaging that organization who initially commissioned the project along with you. One of the statements we make early on in the chapter is many project managers underestimate the need to communicate beyond the project team. Yeah, it's important in, you know, internal project team communications, but I think it's equally important, make sure you're bringing everybody else along, bring the rest of the congregation along, bring the school parents along with what you're doing, because there's a lot of blessings and benefits that come along with that.
You know, I'm reminded of a project I just recently completed over at Martin Luther College, and it was a big project. We redid the whole Martin Luther College website. We needed it to be mobile friendly. We needed to update the design and things, and it touched practically everyone on campus, but not everyone on campus was a web editor and responsible for doing the hands-on work. We needed the whole campus behind the effort, though, and we started probably a year and a half beforehand, and we mapped out a plan, and part of that plan was communication planning to keep everybody up to date and things. And I think that really added to the success of the project. No one felt like their needs weren't being heard. They saw the things develop. They saw us wrestle with things and kind of watched, you know, along the way and kept tabs on things, and were very well informed when the website was ready to go live, so that it wasn't any big shock to anybody. So lots of good communication went on with that project.
Another reason to do that, and we'll get to this a little bit later in the chapter, is if you're bringing them along throughout from beginning to end, it's a lot easier to ask for help. Mm-hmm. It's not a surprise saying, hey, we could really use your guidance here. We could use your assistance here. We're kind of struggling here. We have this obstacle here. Makes a big difference. So you mentioned planning, which was awesome. I mean, that's really where you need to start. You need to intentionalize it, especially for medium to larger size projects where that maybe you have a full-blown communications document or communications plan. There's a couple things that you want to keep in mind as you're building that plan. One is, I think you need to assume that your audience knows nothing, or there are at least some people in the audience that you're trying to reach that really know nothing about it. And that will often happen in a church or school or an organization where a group of individuals have decided to plow forward with a project, but the wider organization isn't involved in that decision. So they kind of have to be brought up to speed. This is why we decided to do this. These are the objectives of the project. And then you kind of have to tell a story. You know, what is it and why is it so important? How does it involve them? How is it all going to end? You know, kind of walk them through the entire narrative of what it is that you're doing.
Definitely important steps. I think the other thing that you need to keep in mind is that you can't just communicate once.
Right.
You have to tell them. Actually, I think it reminds me of my husband and his sermon writing it back in the day, you know, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then remind them what you told them. You know, you really have to drive that message home. How many times do you need to see things in front of you before you actually kind of engage the brain in it and stuff? So if you're building a communication plan, definitely build in redundancy to the plan.
Right. Say it different ways and say it in on different channels. Yeah, absolutely. And have different people say it even. So not just the same person, perhaps. And then maybe the last thing to consider when you're talking about planning and you know, communicating that plan is remember that you need a call to action usually. So your communication needs a purpose. What is it that you want the audience, the hearers, to do as a result of hearing or reading your message? And it can be as simple as, you know, asking for prayers for, you know, the success of the project. Can be feedback. It can be volunteer. It can be, you know, spread the word. There's lots of different calls to action, but that's kind of marketing 101. What is it that you hope to accomplish with your communication? It shouldn't just be, you know, here's the news of the project. What's the specific reason for sharing that?
And, you know, interesting, Martin, that you say the last thing, because as you're developing the communication plan, or in my mind, as I'm developing training or whatever it is that I want to communicate, I often start at the end. I start at that call to action, that what is it that I want them to take away from this? And then I work backwards to build my plan. So even though it's the thing you leave them with, definitely plan your communication to focus toward that call to action.
The next section we talk about is maybe one that is I see used very rarely, I think, in internal communications or communications within a church or a school, and that's this concept of branding. Give the project, at least some projects, medium, larger size, important projects, give them some kind of identity. Give them a little bit of a design flavor so that when you're publishing it in the bulletin or when you're sending out an email, you have some kind of identifiable symbol that will connect very quickly the audience to the project. So give it a name, give it a logo of some sort, give it some kind of brand so that when people look at your stuff, they say, oh, that's that project. So you don't have to kind of explain again, you know, with just words, what it is we're doing over and over and over again.
Yeah, great idea. And I think that adds to that redundancy thing, that it has a look, it's recognizable. People are going to associate in their brains, you know, the title or whatever it is. You give a great example in the book of a year-long Bible reading project you did in your church. And you just, you know, gave it a name and used the same font over and over again, maybe a screenshot of the Bible that you're reading or whatever. And it takes on, you know, a little bit more prominence in their memory to have those things associated with it.
And there are reasons that companies have logos and brands and slogans, those kinds of things. So that's not to say that you always need it, but I think there are certain cases where it's certainly helpful to do it and then apply a brand. The good news is that you don't necessarily have to be a graphic designer to do it, although if you have somebody in your church who has those skill sets, great. Those people are golden. Bring them into the project planning process and have them do some work for you. But there are some online tools. One that we mentioned in the book in our tool time is Lucid Press. Lucid Press, we've talked a little bit about in the past. I think Jason Schmidt, I think, brought it up in one of the shows we were talking about educational technology. This is a web-based desktop publishing tool, and there had been quite a bit of quite a bit of gap in this kind of space in the online tooling, and you know, other than things like InDesign and Microsoft Publisher, this is one that's totally web-based, free to use. There's some obviously upgrade possibilities with it, but it is a tool that you could easily use to put together some visually appealing flyers, you know, some designs that will kind of reinforce that image.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty painless process. So one of the things that people often try to do is use something like Microsoft Word that isn't necessarily geared for just layout and things. It's more text-driven and confining, I think.
And Microsoft Word does a good job of words. yeah, but if definitely. You want to kind of throw in the visuals, I think your tools are elsewhere.
In the book, you also mentioned that there's a cool website, Fiverr. There's probably others out there. It's got a funny spelling, F-I-V-E-R-R, Fiverr.com. And it will allow you to go out and for as little as $5, hire a designer to do some logo design or whatever it is that you need. You kind of describe your needs to them and they give you back a product for a very affordable price. I've actually used Fiverr before.
Oh, really? For what?
Yeah, for an interim Treasure House logo. We were working on a Treasure House project, which is a local resale shop that I'm involved with that supports our Lutheran High School here in town. And so, yeah, great experience. Quick turnaround and quality work from the designer that I engaged for all of $5, literally. $5 will get you there. One that wasn't in the book, Martin, but that I like to use is Canva.com, which is another image layout, online image layout tool, and very easy and intuitive to use. I use it to work up the Wells Tech Photo Challenge image each month and for other purposes as well. So very robust tool, and it actually suggests a whole bunch of layouts for you. So you don't even need a designer to do really cool layouts and things with Canva. So I'm guessing Lucid Press probably does the same thing. I just don't have experience with it, but giving you a starting point on design.
Yeah, I think the difference between the two, if you're trying to decide, Canva, I think, is image first. Mm-hmm. Lucid Press is kind of an even mix between text and images, more of that desktop publishing experience. So mm-hmm. I think both serve a great purpose. So
absolutely.
So that's kind of the branding side. And then we moved into more of the, well, how do you get the word out? And we call that I call that section regular updates, and importance on both of those needs to be a consistent thing. And then we talked a little bit about, well, what channels are available to get these updates out. So you want to obviously give updates about different things, but you want to kind of make that kind of a systematic way you maybe work through the project at different milestones along the way and say, well, at this milestone, we need to get this kind of news out. And at this milestone, we're going to talk about this. So you kind of intentionalize it as you go through the project and then pick your channel.
Yeah. And actually, you know, asking that question, what channels are available? It's almost like what channels aren't available.
Right.
I mean, there's just so many nowadays.
Right.
And, you know, you need to, in your specific situation, kind of see where your audience is in terms of communication. Maybe some churches are all about social media and they can jump right on that social media bandwagon and use their church Facebook page or a special Facebook page to keep people up to date on the project status. And that would reach the majority of your members or people in your organization or whatever it may be. And so certainly take advantage of that. You know, you can have conversations around things and you can also engage people that are connected. That concept of online ambassadors, we've talked about that before on the show, Martin, where you know who those connected type people are. You get your message to them and ask them to share it further. And so you're kind of taking advantage of that networking capability of social networks.
Yep. Good. One channel that may surprise people that we kind of put so much importance on it in the book is still that concept of email. I think a lot of people think, well, that's a little bit old-fashioned. Nobody uses email. That's not really true, and that'll depend on your situation, of course. But email is very effective because it is a push technology and it's coming into somebody's inbox versus kind of a come and see strategy like websites are. And there's a lot of possibilities with email, but there's some rules, you know, that you need to think about when you're using email. And we strongly suggest using some of the email campaigns out there, which we've talked about in the past, specifically MailChimp, which really make it easy to kind of keep this consistent flow of communication going, make it look visually appealing, and then also track how it's doing. That's one of the big benefits of using a tool like MailChimp, because you can use some analytics. How many people actually read the email? And of those people who read the email, did they click on a link? And if so, what link? Those kinds of things are really helpful to kind of gauge the effectiveness of your communication.
Absolutely. We also want to make mention of surveys and the fact that you can use your audience almost for testing purposes and at times and things like that, where you could have them check out the product or the website or whatever it is that you're developing and give you feedback on it, perhaps through a survey tool like Google Forms, we've talked about many times on the show, or SurveyMonkey. There's several of them out there. I think WooFoo is another one. So lots of forms tools that allow you to just build quick and easy forms, gather information, and you'll be able to analyze it like in a spreadsheet behind the scenes.
Yep. This whole concept of figuring out how to engage your audience is I think, pretty important in the communication process within a church or school. Don't just kind of let them passively soak up the information. Get them thinking, get them participating, and surveys are a great way to do that.
You probably don't want to do a survey every
Not day. Every project, but yeah, use it judiciously, but use Absolutely. It when you need it. I mean, if you want feedback, surveys are a great tool.
Absolutely. And then there's the tried and true blogs and website communication. I think blogs are a really great fit. You know, it's a good place to go and just give a quick update, and people know that it's kind of date-centric. So when something new, it pops up at the top of the blog post or the blog website, and just a good way to do a quick and easy update on a regular basis. And you can, you know, push those out to things like Facebook pages or email campaigns or whatever as well.
Yep. Nice thing about blogs is, you know, that linear nature of it, and it works well for updates. So the latest post is at the top. So if people want to kind of review the history of the project, kind of bring themselves up to speed, blogs are a great way to do that, probably better than websites per se. But don't underestimate it. And blogs are so easy to set up, you know, these days with whatever kind of system you're using, whether it's Final Web or WordPress or whatever, they all kind of have blogging tools. And there's things like medium.com that are pretty popular now as well. So really yeah. easy to set up.
Lots of good stuff. So yeah, definitely engage others and do that regular update process so that your communication continues to go out on a regular basis.
One last thing that I wanted to mention that I found really helpful in my work in my church is kind of an intentional engagement of other church groups. So as you're thinking about your project, don't think about it in isolation, whether it's, you know, running a VBS or a Through the Bible, Read Through the Bible in a Year project. How can other groups within your organization be a part of it? So you're reaching out to them saying, well, let's strategize together. How can, let's say, evangelism be a part of our VBS program, or adult discipleship, or the property team, or, you know, whoever. So you're kind of thinking beyond your own borders, and that's a great way to communicate amongst other ministry areas, and then they can communicate with their network as well. So don't underestimate the organizational groups that you have at your disposal, and I think that's critically important.
Yeah, definitely. You're part of an organization, just like our conversation started, Martin. Nehemiah didn't necessarily have a huge organization behind him, but we do, and we should take advantage of that. And you know, our projects are going to be benefit from the fact that it's not just a small fledgling project group that's trying to make everything happen.
Right. And I guess the last point we make in the chapter is one that probably goes without saying, but we'll say it, is your number one communication strategy should be your communication with God. He is the one that ultimately has commissioned the work, right? He's the one that said, do this, and you're trying to listen to his call for action, and to ask him to bless the efforts, and to go to him consistently, you know, as an individual, as a project manager, as a team, as an organization, as a congregation or school. So critically important. So build that into your communications planning as well.
And there's one thing we have in common with Nehemiah.
That's so. Right. He did that early and often.
God.
Yeah, absolutely. we'd like to jump to an interview that we did. We thought, well, who could we talk to that has some pretty big project plans? And this individual seems to have a lot of big projects, you know, year after year. And we've talked to him before. And his project this time is a big one and an interesting one, as we talk with Professor Tom Custer about an online conference coming up real soon. So it's very timely, both for the book, but also to get involved as well. And this conference is, as many of his projects are, about technology, mobile technology in particular, and reaching out. So let's listen to our interview with Professor Tom Custer.
We're happy to have joining us today on Wells Tech, Tom Custer, who is currently the director of the Christ in Media Institute out of Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And we specifically wanted to have you on to talk about an upcoming online conference that you're coordinating for Christ in Media. I believe the title is Gospel in Media Worldwide. I'm sorry.
Okay, it's Gospel Outreach with Media, G-O-W-M is our website, G-O-W-M.org will be the website that we're on. Yeah, and we're really excited about it. And you're focusing on communication this week in this chapter of your book, I understand. Is that correct?
That's right, and we thought your online conference would be a great fit for that chapter because we want to learn more about your conference, obviously, but obviously having an online conference means folks have to be creative with their communication. So maybe get started and tell us a little bit about the conference itself and what's going to be happening there.
Well, conferences, as you know, are all about communication. It's getting people together with people from whom they can learn, and the presenters also learn from the people who attend, and so it's really a two-way street, and they're exciting events. And our conference is entirely online. That means that people don't have to go to a location. They can do this from home. Our byline is you can attend this conference in your pajamas. Mm-hmm. Day or night, between the time the conference opens, the day after Easter, on March 28th, and it will remain open online for questions and comments of for the presenters for 3 weeks after that. So we'll close on April 10th. We'll close conference to comments and questions and discussion, and at that point we will archive it so that the conference will be there along with all the comments and questions and the discussion for people to access and read in the future.
So this is a fairly recent technology that these online conferences can happen. Did you model this after something, or have you done some of these before?
Well,
why did you decide to go this way?
My inspiration in this, as in so many things, is my wife, Judy, who is a professor, retired now from Minnesota State University in Mankato in communication disorders. And she conducted an online conference in her field for the past, for a total of maybe 17 or 18 years.
Wow.
So she started this more than a decade ago and conducted an online conference in her specialty, which is for people who stutter and their families and the professionals who work with them. And she's had an annual online conference in that field for 18 years. And so she said, why don't you be doing this too? And so we brought this idea to our board of directors at the Christ in Media Institute, and they thought it would be a good thing to try. So that's what we're doing this spring.
Cool. So a part of it is obviously a big part of the success of an online conference is making sure people are aware of it, making sure that they understand the concept in and of itself. And I'm assuming that one of the big parts of that promotional strategy you have is the conference website, right?
Yes. Right.
And what's the goal behind that?
It's entirely online, and we're working on the website right now. The system my wife used is a little bit old. We're trying to update that, and so I'm working with a really fine web designer, a young man named Dan Stelius, And anyone who's been around the Wisconsin Synod for a while knows the Stelius name from the professor, I guess, at DMLC from years ago. But this is one of the grandchildren, and he is a computer design specialist student at the University of Minnesota over in Morris. And he's been helping us design the web and teaching me, big learning curve for me, but a very enjoyable one, how to get everything online. So we've had the presenters send us their presentations, and we're modeling it to fit onto our website, so it will be available for people as soon as the conference opens to witness these presentations.
So the conference website really is the epicenter of the conference. People go to that site to participate in the conference.
Yes, that's correct. That's the place. No, there's some real interesting contrast between location conference, person-to-person, face-to-face conference, such as you know much about because you've put on a number of these and done it very well. And in a sense, there's no substitute for this face-to-face conference. We're not trying to replace those. It's great networking to see the people that you've interacted with and would like to learn to know better. Just like with evangelism, there's no substitute for one Christian talking to another. You know, we use technology, we use media to reach out with the gospel, but it's all in support of that basic activity of one Christian talking to somebody who doesn't know Jesus. That will always be the basis. And it's the same thing with conferences. So there are similarities and important differences between what I'll call a location conference and this online conference. And as you say, the key difference is that it's all done on a website.
And then I guess one similarity that would be about the same between the two is the communicating the message of the conference, getting the word out, doing the publicizing, making people aware of it. And so do you have specific strategies around sharing the information and making people aware of the online conference?
We've had some really nice help with publicizing the conference, both institutional and personal. Institutional help is, of course, we've notified the appropriate officers in both the Wisconsin Synod and the ELS, particularly those who are in charge of running mission operations. And they have helped us get the word out with publicity in the channels that they know about that we don't know about, but they've been very helpful in this regard. And the schools, we would try to involve students in our work, college students, high school students. That's a little more challenging. It's hard to reach all of the people who would be interested in the high schools particularly, but we're working on that. One of our board members, Greg Schibelhut, is a faculty member at Luther High School in Onalaska, and he has some insights in how to reach his fellows in the other high schools. Of course, we have another board member, Deb Eaker, who teaches at Wisconsin Lutheran College in Milwaukee, and she's working from that end as well. We're here in New Ulm. We have contacts like you and some other people who are presenting at the conference from MLC, so we're hoping that our colleges are covered. We're trying to reach the Concordias. We're not trying to limit this to anybody. So those are institutional contacts we have, and they're helping to get the word out. And then, of course, we all have a big list of individuals who have contacted us. The Christ in Media Institute has a group of about 40 people now. We call them partners. They're people who have agreed to simply be interested in what we do. We send them out reports on what we're up to every month or so, and we've asked them to contact friends, relatives, people they know that might be interested in the conference. We've designed a little poster, and we've sent that out, and they can print it out and distribute it in places that they know about. And then there's some other connections we have with people outside of our fellowship who have helped us learn about reaching out with the gospel using technology, and they may be helping us as well.
Yeah, to me, Christ in Media is a great example of using some of those tools and the value of a network, and you work very hard at kind of keeping that network because it becomes so much easier if you've got more than just your voice, talking up, thinking about, sharing, whatever it is that you're doing, right?
Yes. And of course, as you know, networking is really an important part of any conference. Certainly in face-to-face conferences, the meeting of the people, what goes on over snacks and breaks and things like that is one of the most important things that happens at a face-to-face conference. And that will be the same thing here, except in a different scope and a different scale, perhaps, because since we're online, we can have people presenting who aren't there. They can be any place in the world. And so we can have presenters who are mission workers who are on site in Africa or Asia or wherever they might be. They'll be participating in the conference. And, of course, attendees can be from any place in the world as well. And so we have people who could not come to a location conference because of distance or expense. Who will be at this conference, and we have presenters who couldn't come. We have people who would not come to one of our conferences because they're outside of our circles, and yet they would find us through various Google searches or whatever pops up, and we've had contacts from people that we never imagined would even know about us, and we expect some of those might show up at the conference as well. And so connections could happen in an online conference that otherwise would not happen. And beyond that, just to add one more thing, all of our presentations have a Google Translate button on them. Mm-hmm. And so although that system isn't perfect, it would enable people in a wide variety of languages to see what's going on at our conference and to reply. And so we'll see what happens with that as well.
Wow, that's a great communication point. I'm wondering, Tom, about the presentations. Are they real-time presentations, or is everything done asynchronously? And will you have some kind of a discussion board or whatever set up for communicating during the conference?
I love that question because that's the essence of the conference. It's all asynchronous. That is, you don't have to be at the conference at any place. Certainly, you do this from home or any place your computer connects with, and there's no time connections either. So the presentations are all there, and a person attending can go at any time, read, look at the presentations he or she wants to see, is interested in, and then there each presentation has a comment page connected with it. So a person attending the conference can ask questions, make comments, add things. We're hoping that a lot of people will add their expertise and experience to what is presented, and the discussion will flow. We're hoping kind of for a double benefit from the conference, not just from the presentations, but also from the participation of the people who join in and write these comments and questions. And then, of course, the presenters will respond to them, and other people will respond to those, and that's our hope, at least. We'll see how that works. So, but it can be done at any time over this three-week period. Join in, come back a couple days later, and see what people have said about what you posted.
So are the presentations in presentation form? So are there PowerPoints? Are there videos, audio files? What is the typical presentation look like?
Most of the presentations are in print. People write a few paragraphs. But we do have some videos, and we do have some PowerPoints and other formats that will be available. It depends on what the presenters would like to send. But they're all fairly short. We didn't want to burden the presenters. Another difference, perhaps, with a face-to-face conference is that the presenters don't have to fill up an hour or an hour 20-minute time slot. And many of them have just sent a few paragraphs reporting on what they're doing with the hope that someone who attends can pick up on that and add to it or build on it, and the discussion continues. So it's not a heavy burden of presentations, not a heavy burden on the attendees either, because they can scan these presentations, find what they're interested in, and respond accordingly.
So from a project management standpoint, you've obviously needed to do a lot of communication to make all of this come together, communicate, publicize, communicate with your presenters, all of that. And then obviously the conference itself is a great example of communication at work, and we'll be watching and taking note of how all that communication develops.
Well,
for
I have to mention one more thing, if I may, and that is the ability of attendees to visit all the sessions. You know, there's nothing more frustrating at a live conference than to see all the sessions you want to attend scheduled into the same time slot, right? Mm-hmm. But here the attendees can look at all the sessions, and since they'll be archived, you don't have to take notes, you don't have to worry about handouts. They can go back after they've seen them once and see them again, or review them even after the conference is over. So there will be that benefit as well.
So you really, I know you wrote a chapter. You really don't stop promoting this, though. So for the 3 weeks, I'm sure you're going to continue sending the emails, getting the word out, and maybe even after that, now the resources are collected and the benefits of kind of having the conference are shareable as well.
Yeah, that's right. I know you wrote an earlier chapter in your book about risk assessment. Mm-hmm. And you know, with working with technology, and this is our first time doing this with some new approaches on the online conference, we're hoping and praying that everything will work, because it has to work for everybody. Anybody's browser, anybody's service provider, anybody's device, any country in the world, and I'm sure we'll run into some glitches where we'll have to help people find us or make the comment section work or things like that, but we're hoping to have all that smoothed out. We're anticipating and hoping to have all that smoothed out in advance, but we'll see.
Wonderful. Anticipating communication risk. How about that?
Absolutely. Just remind us once again, Tom, what the dates are and what the website address is.
The conference opens on the day after Easter, March 28th. And we'll probably open a little bit earlier because we're worldwide and time zones are around the world. So we'll probably have something open on Easter evening. And the website people should go to is GOWM, that's Gospel Outreach with Media, GOWM.org. And we'll be open for comments and questions and discussion for 3 weeks until April 10th.
Awesome. Very good. Well, we appreciate it very much. You've given us this inside look at the communications publicity, and communications plan for the Gospel Outreach with Media Conference that's coming up. Thanks, Tom.
Tom's got a lot of ideas, and he is able to execute on many of them, and that's kind of the fun that comes along with our conversations with Tom, just the excitement that he has for his projects, and those projects really do deliver. So I'm excited about this conference that he's talking about.
I am too, and I'm excited it worked into our discussion about communication, because obviously doing the online conference, the Gospel Outreach with Media online conference, is going to involve a lot of communication. So make sure you check out links we have on the show notes to learn more about the conference. Their website isn't up quite yet, but it'll be at gowm.org, I believe. And we also have a link to the conference sessions. They've got some really cool stuff planned, reaching out to community, things about videography, about rallying mission support for your congregation. They have some panel discussions included. Again, Martin, like you mentioned earlier, there's a focus on mobile devices. As more and more people have these smart devices in their pocket, you know, how you can spread the gospel phone to phone, and online Bibles and different things like that. Encouraging the needed talent for writing and visual arts and music. Expanding approaches to gospel outreach with media. And this covers a lot of really interesting people talking about a lot of different things, from supporting the military to Christian Media for Non-Christian Audiences by someone named Jonathan Witte. I think we know him. Yeah, and lots more good stuff here. So be sure to check this out. Get excited about this conference, folks. We're going to talk about it more on Wells Tech as the conference opens and we get access to all these different topics. And just really happy that Christ in Media has taken this on and that Dr. Custer was willing to share his ideas with us. And we look forward to learning more about it.
Yep. As always, Tom, thanks for coming on the show. Mm-hmm. All right, we should move along, Sally, and that means that we should talk about our Wells Now segment.
And happening now in Wells is an update from our Shop Wells program. Shop Wells is a program where congregation, schools, and Wells members individually can get discounts from different vendors. It's kind of taking advantage of being part of a large organization and broker discounts for Wells folks. And we communicate that most commonly through something called the Shop Wells Insider. Martin, I think you're familiar with the Shop Wells Insider.
Right. Shop Wells Insider was a quarterly newsletter that talked about some of the new vendors that have come into the program, talked about some of the specials that were available during that quarter. We're changing that up a little bit. We're making it more of kind of a steady stream of these so that the information that comes out of it can be more timely. It's all electronic. We do publish, and we probably still will publish one issue a year that we send out to everybody. But the ShopWells Insider is by subscription. So if you go to shopwells.net, you can go to the right side and click on ShopWells Insider and then subscribe to that. You'll get an email, and you won't get an email every day, certainly, maybe not even every week, but you'll have opportunity to kind of keep up to date on some of the things that are going on in the program. We have all kinds of vendors from cell phone vendors to office supplies to organ vendors to copiers to whatever. They're all in there, hotels and rental cars, etc. So that is ShopWells, and we're really excited about kind of the change in format and some of the new vendors we've had coming into the program.
All right. I think that pushes us right into our picks of the week, Martin. So I'm going to
fire it up.
And share a pick that I found recently, and perhaps you've seen it pop up in different places. It seems like Google just pushed this out. It's Google-centric, believe it or not, and it's actually related to the Chrome browser. Martin, I think you and I have had discussions about our love of the Chrome experience, but also the downside of Chrome using a lot of memory and things. Yeah. And I think a lot of that maybe is related to the fact that they have so many great extensions and you want to load them all up in your browser, but yet all of those are draining your experience just a little bit. So now there's a Chrome cleanup tool. It's at google.com/chrome/cleanup-tool. And you can download this tool and it'll run through what you have associated with your Chrome and clean up things. It says it'll scan and remove software that may cause problems with Chrome, such as crashes, unusual startup pages or toolbars, unexpected ads you can't get rid of, or otherwise changing your browsing experience. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are out to hijack your experience and perhaps make use of it for their own purposes. And it's super easy to have happen to you. And this cleanup tool looks like just the thing to get you back on track and make your Chrome experience a lot better. So
yeah,
just a nice utility they're providing.
Good pick. I have kind of a love-hate relationship with Chrome. Chrome gives you so many advantages over, I think, any other browser. Especially with the ecosystem of extensions. In fact, a lot of the tools and a lot of the websites that you go to and a lot of the tools we use in the Synod have nice Chrome extensions that come along with them to help use them, like Trello and those kinds of things are kind of really benefit from that. But then you get the negative of the memory usage and some crashing and, you know, just you shake your head sometimes. Why can't they fix this? So this is, I think, one step toward that. So Chrome is definitely worth trying to attach some tools that'll make it a better experience. So good find. Yep. Have you tried it then? What has it done for you?
especially on my home computer, which tends to choke more often than my work computer. And it did clean up my experience a good bit. You can actually go to Task Manager and see, how many Chrome type things are running in the background. And it just greatly reduced that. So it freed up my computer's brain a lot.
Good. Okay. My pick of the week is a utility. It's in beta, but I have heard good things about how well it's working, even though it's just out. And that is a converter or a migration tool to help you move from Evernote to OneNote. Now, we've talked about both of these products in the past, and I guess I would have to say that I have not used Evernote in the past 3 to 4 years, especially since OneNote has kind of upped its game. To me, OneNote is one of those tools that I would really, really miss if I didn't have it in my toolbox. It's a note-taking tool. It basically does everything you throw at it. Anything you want to capture in OneNote, you can, whether it's images, files, just raw notes. You can link it to Outlook, so you can save emails in it. You can link note to note. You can share notes. Just a super, super flexible tool. And now that they've made this so easy to get out of Evernote and into OneNote, I think there's probably some people that are thinking maybe this is a good idea. Evernote has really not upped their game as much as OneNote has over the same time period. So now they've got this importer. I believe the importer is only available for PCs right now, not for Mac. OneNote on the Mac is a fairly new experience, although I've been using it without any problems. And one of the neat things about Evernote and OneNote is you can sync between whatever you're using. And there's mobile apps, and that's one thing OneNote has kind of done in the past couple years too, is provide really stable, really usable experiences on iPad and iPhone and Android phones, etc. Some people say, well, what's the difference between OneNote and Evernote? Right on their migration screen here, they give a chart. And this is, of course, from OneNote's side of things. And Evernote may have a different chart, but these are accurate because I've used both products. Some of the big differences are offline access. OneNote offers that by default. You have to pay for Evernote Plus or Premium on the Evernote side. Unlimited monthly uploads. That is true for OneNote, but not for Evernote. There's a 60 megabyte limit for the free version and a 1 gigabyte limit for the paid version. One big thing, and I would agree with this, write anywhere on the page with freeform canvas. We talked before about the difference between, let's say, Microsoft Word and LucidPress, where you had a lot more flexibility with page layout on LucidPress than you do Microsoft Word. Same kind of thing here. You can throw anything anywhere on a OneNote page and kind of draw arrows and move boxes around and kind of work on this freeform canvas. Evernote is more of that text-based, text-first experience where you start typing in, and it's more, I think it does a nice job with text, but it doesn't give you the freedom that a OneNote does. And then some of the other two at the bottom, save emails into your notes. OneNote does a really nice job with that, integrates nicely with Outlook. There's a button right in Outlook where you can send emails right to OneNote. Digitized business cards, so optical character recognition. So you just do a quick scan. I do all my scanning of business receipts into OneNote, and I can do a search for them later. I can send them to my administrative assistant who handles the credit card stuff. Just a real great experience. So you can probably tell I'm a big OneNote fan, and this just makes it easier for other people to experience the same thing.
Yeah, I haven't dipped real heavily into Evernote. I've played with it, but I am becoming a OneNote believer. And I think the one thing that you discussed that is key to me is that free form canvas and the fact that I can put things wherever I want them to be. And I've definitely made use of that, and it's helped me a lot as I organize things using OneNote. Yep. So
free product too. And so the free version is probably as much as a lot of people would need. And if you have the Office 365 subscription, then you get all the other tools with that too. So mm-hmm. That is my pick of the week. Let's move on to ministry resources. Something from our friend Rachel Feld.
Yeah, I'm going to share my screen and share an article that we found over on the Bread for Beggars site titled Teaching Little Ones About Lent. You guys will remember Rachel. I think we interviewed her last week, and she was one of our presenters at Wells Tech Conference last summer. And she's an early elementary teacher, and she has a lot of things to say about using technology in the early elementary classroom. And this one in particular, she pointed to her Pinterest board. Yay, Pinterest, where she's put together all kinds of Bible lessons about Lent. So thank you, Rachel, for curating this board. Looks like it has some really great stuff. And, you know, I thought it was interesting at the end of her blog post, she says, you know, I do my best to read through the things that I'm sharing and vet them for their theology, basically. But we all know that you have to, you know, use things from the World Wide Web with discernment and things. And I just appreciate Rachel's list that she put together. She featured just a few of them. One that I thought was particularly interesting was something called Lent Prayer Pals, available from Teachers Pay Teachers. So that's a site where teachers can share their resources. You can download them, pay for them, whatever. Some of them are free as well. This kind of takes off on the concept of like a Secret Santa or a Prayer Pal, where you are assigned someone to pray for, and it's done with some printables that you can do reproduce for your students to write down prayers for their Lenten prayer buddy, maybe do some artwork for their prayer pal or whatever it may be. I thought it was a fun concept and a way to engage students in Lenten preparations and prayer. So many, many other ideas shared here in the blog post and on Rachel's Pinterest board, so you'll want to check that out.
Very neat. And again, just a plug for Bread for Beggars, constant source of ministry resources on our show, and probably something you ought to bookmark. They put some good stuff up there. I think our featured video is going to talk a little bit about Lent too, Sally.
That's correct. We have a video from our friends at Koine. Koine has a whole Lenten program they've put together called Footsteps to the Cross, and this is just one of their performances focusing on a song, Jesus Grant That Balm and Healing. So there's a reading at the beginning from Isaiah 53 that kind of sets the mood of the song, and just very well done. It's part of a playlist they've titled Lenten Hymns and Music, as well as a Footsteps to the Cross Illuminated playlist. So lots of great music from Koine available out on YouTube, and we'll have this song embedded in our show notes at wellstech.wells.net, and we'll have links to those playlists as well.
Awesome. All right. I think that's going to be a wrap for this week's show. Looking forward already to next week's show, one of our favorites. We do our community feedback once a month now, so we kind of collect everything that you have shared, you listeners and viewers, across the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, and we talk about it. So we do, that's the show's lineup, and that's basically all we do. So community feedback is next week. So you still have time to submit your entry. We read or talk about almost everything we receive. So best way to do that is go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and you can see all of the connection points at the top of the screen, all of our social networks and so on. If you want to just send us good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net is the email address. There is really no shortage of ways to communicate with us. And share whatever you like. If you've got an idea for Lent or Easter, something special that you're doing with technology, let us know that. You have a question, you want us to talk about something, all those are fair game. So just share what's on your mind, and we'd be happy to include that in the show. If you want to remain anonymous, just let us know that too, and we will honor that request. Sally, thanks so much for your time once again. I think morning's work.
That's what I'm wondering. Are you feeling energized and ready to attack the rest of the day?
Well, we'll see by the afternoon whether I need a little pick-me-up. But I think so far, so good. It was fun.
All right. Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and blessings on your Lenten journey. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.